On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other fine publications. Our guest today is Lorraine Jeckles, the CEO of Free Brands, a London-based creative agency serving the insurance industry. She also is incoming chair of the Insurance Marketing and Communications Association. Welcome, Lorraine. Good to see you.
Hi, Peter. Yeah. Good to see you. Lovely to be here.
Yeah. Well, we have a lot to talk about in terms of insurance as an employer brand and the careers that we know are great, but also branding and marketing in the insurance industry in general. But let's start with you. Tell us about your career and how did you get involved in this great industry of branding and marketing?
Well, it's not a direct route and probably a little bit unusual because I actually began my career in HR. I was working for, in the early, late 90s, a Lloyd's managing agency. A Lloyd's managing agency is basically the operational company that looks after Lloyd's syndicates. So, you know, in that day and age, most of the trading was done face-to-face, right? In the Lloyd's building, you know, underwriters would go across and they'd sit on, you know, the box, right? And brokers would line up and they'd do deals, they'd do all the negotiations on the trading floor. Mm-hmm. They'd kind of go over there at 11, they'd come back around 1. And, you know, that was it, phone calls, emails, and we didn't even have a marketing department. Right.
Yeah,
so there weren't really brands. All the syndicates had, and I mean, they still have numbers, but all of the names were whoever was the lead underwriter, the active underwriter. So everything, you know, was built on the reputation of the people within that syndicate. And that's really what was there instead of a brand. Right. But my job within HR was largely focused on recruitment, right, and retention. So how do you differentiate yourself against all the other, you know, people in the market who are trying to recruit the same top talent? And when you've got that top talent, how do you keep them? So, you know, this was really my first exposure to, you know, understanding the importance of a proposition, of, you know, how the purpose of a company, really trying to work out how do you differentiate yourself and stand out and put forward the values and the culture of a business as real positives and that flag that people want to march behind. So, you know, we had an ad agency that would help us, you know, with our recruitment ads, and they'd ask some difficult questions like, why you? Obvious questions, I now know, but, you know, that stumped me the first time. It's like, why would you pick us? And I gave the stats, you know, we've got this much revenue, this many people, and it just didn't feel like it had said everything about us as a business. And similarly, when you're looking to, you know, look after the people and communicate with the people in the company. How do you do that in a more engaging way? I mean, a lot of HR communications, particularly back then, were a little bit dry, right? And mm-hmm. it's a bit, you know, functional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's contractual stuff. So, you know, I started working with a graphic designer to try and elevate, you know, the communications we were putting out as a department to try and show what we could do. And actually, the feedback we then got from the headhunters and the recruitment agents was, wow, your candidate packs are amazing. You guys are doing a great job. It's a really easy sell. And I think that was the first time that it kind of clicked with me that, you know, articulating your proposition, you know, having a clear position in the market, really being able to talk about what you're like as a company, what your values meant in the real world, as well as, you know, looking good, right, and having all the stats to back it up. But that was the first time I really understood what a brand was and what building a brand was all about. And I've kind of been obsessed with it ever since.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Well, that's cool. It's so familiar, but I think it's so cool you started kind of on the inside, because the best brands are built from the inside out. You know, like what is the heartbeat around here? I know here in the U.S., a lot of HR departments have done a better job of articulating the values. I'm not saying they look as pretty. I mean, there's still a lot of text, a lot of gray matter, but they've done a better job of saying, hey, what it's like to work here. Yeah. You know, here are, you know, leading with the values. Here's our six or seven core values, and this is what it's like to work here. Does this look like a place you'd want to be, you know? And so that's really cool. You started in HR, and to this day, a lot of HR departments still are in charge of external marketing, and sometimes there's a bit of friction there because they're both equally important, but the external piece is, it's similar, it should be similar kinds of sentiment, but often the, you know, communicating the 401k changes, or here in the US we have something called a 401k, but the benefits like takes the lead over, you know, hey, we need to go to this event and really showcase, and so it sometimes is a budget fight, but overall I think they've gotten better.
I mean, it's nearly 3 decades that I'm talking about, so
so you have, so how did you get from HR at this Lloyd's affiliate to doing your own thing?
Well, it was, I took a career break to have my kids, had a couple of years off.
Oh, the unpaid work, the unpaid work.
And I needed a rest, so I wanted to go back to work. And, you know, I just wanted to do something that was, you know, meaningful, that would obviously use my skill set, but also had that kind of clearer line of sight to having a commercial impact, and that was much more consistently positive and uplifting. Right, HR is great work; it's really enjoyable, it's really meaningful, but there's some hard parts to it. You know, I think marketing is you know, really exciting. It's got so many challenges, but you still have to have that deep understanding of people and, you know, what drives them, you know, all of the different audiences, you know, whatever sectors they are, you need to, it starts with the person and that you're trying to communicate with them. So that was, you know, we started the agency, and having come from just big corporate land, I hadn't really appreciated what it took to build a business, and, you know, all the operational infrastructure and systems and processes. And so, you know, I still do a lot of that today. I mean, you know, you've built your own fantastic business, and it always seems like it's going to be easier because you're going to do this fun thing that you really want to do.
Well, I can, we could have a whole separate podcast on mistakes I've made.
things I've learned
along the way. Well, they're all such teachable moments. In the moment, you're like, just your mouth's open. You're like, oh my gosh, did that just happen? Did I just say that? Or did I miss it by that much? Or whatever the mistake was. But then looking back, it's like it all kind of goes into this thing called life and being a business owner. I actually, maybe you feel this way too. I think when you're in the corporate world, there's so much, you have all this support, all these trappings, assuming the politics align and things, you got clarity there, but there's really no downside risk unless you really, really screw up, you know. But the upside risk is you're going to be in this group and you can only make so much and you can only do so many things. And, you know, you maybe be in the same meeting 1,000 times. And when you go out on your own, there's zero upside risk. If you don't do your work, there's downside risk. It can be. But as you build confidence, it's just exciting to be on your own. And a lot of our listeners are independent agents and brokers, who are on their own and they built their own thing. So they know what I'm talking about here. Maybe you feel that way too.
100%. You know, I mean, one of the proudest things for us is that our very first client 13 years ago is still a client today. Right. And that, you know, it does get me because the faith that they had in us, you know, they were the only client, you know, did we know what we were doing? We knew what we were trying to achieve. We knew what we were doing, but did we have all the processes figured out? And they believed in us, and we've done great things with them together, you know, over the last, you know, however many 13 years. And that's, to me, is the, is what it's all about, right? The market will always change. Things will always be different. You've got to continually evolve, try and keep in front of it. But at the end of the day, you know, working in that close partnership with your clients, you know, you're on the same team. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah.
You know, when they win, you win. You know, it's really, yeah, it's a really exciting and rewarding.
It is.
You know, job.
You don't feel like it's a vendor-ish relationship. You feel like a business
exactly.
partner. Like I think that's a great place to be in any kind of consultancy. If you're helping people and you feel just a different connection. So congrats on that. And you and I have talked in the past about some of the issues the insurance industry has had with presenting itself well. We used to call it lost in a sea of blue because it was all insurance.
Yeah.
Blue was kind of blue boring. Everybody had mm-hmm. the same, you know, even the same PMS color blue. We were tracking this. Dozens and dozens of insurance companies had the same mm-hmm. blue. So around that time, I think you started your firm and you started to address the blue over there across the pond mm-hmm. from here, as
yeah.
we did here with a couple of clients to try to get them to say, hey, listen, if you look at this slide of logos and competitors you have, even if they're not direct competitors, how are you going to stand out if you just have the same
yeah.
sounding name, the same color blue? Like, let's do something different. Let's do something fresh. Was that something that energized you at Free to do, to
yeah.
change the game a little there?
100%. I mean, and mm-hmm. it still does. I mean, you know our team. And mm-hmm. you know, these guys have come from worked with some of the biggest brands in B2C, right? And that's been the exciting opportunity for us, is how do we get some of that energy, excitement, innovation from that world into what we know is a fantastic and fascinating industry, right? And that's really it. It starts with strategy and research, right? Everything comes from insights and understanding. But it's looking at, you know, exactly that color wheel. How are you going to stand out? Differentiation is so important. And particularly now we're heading into this softening market, right? Why? You need a really strong, compelling reason for people to choose you, but you also need to be distinctive and for people to remember who you are and what, you know, what you stand for. So I think that's how we've worked with our clients, is really getting under the skin of those businesses. Because they're all individual, you know, that's the thing. Insurance marketing, I think, is probably one of the most complex and difficult types of environments to do marketing and communications in, because on the surface of it, the products are all pretty similar, right? But then you get into it and you've got so many different industries, so many different classes of business, so many different audiences, you know, and the ecosystem is vast, right? Sometimes you're talking to clients, sometimes you're talking to reinsurers, sometimes talking to brokers, wholesalers, you know, MGA, how does it all fit together? And really, you know, that's why I have the clients that we work with and the marketers, you know, in the IMCA are just some of the most flexible. Forget yoga, right? You want to be flexible, you want to be super agile, you want to be super innovative, and you want to do more with less, you be an insurance marketing communications professional, right? That is, because you've got to know everything. You've got to really understand it. Plus, you've got to know all of the marketing science and then apply it. And then you've got to sell it up the chain to the FD or the head of treasury and say, this is worth an investment. And, you know, that's really what we're here to help with.
Yeah. And that's, I think you just hit it on the head there, that selling the brand, the value of branding, in a world where an insurance world, where a lot of people are thinking numbers, they're thinking sales, mm-hmm. They're thinking more short term. They look at marketing often as like an expense, not an investment.
Yeah.
The pressure's on marketers to do it well, so it's an investment, not an expense, and not a project, but long-term. But still, because it's such an odd industry, a product people really don't want, but they desperately need, they got to have it.
Yeah.
There's so many layers. I think you said it well with all the different distribution channels and so forth. There's so many layers. But how do you help your clients navigate that complexity? How do you help your clients sell to the treasury? I assume you mean that the CFO. over here. Yeah, the finance side, the people paying the bills. Because we know the best brands are doing this. You can see them in the marketplace. There's that investment that occurs year over year. It's very hard to pull off in this industry.
Yeah,
So.
absolutely. I mean, I think that you said it there, the proof is visible to us right now. You go back 20 or 30 years, you can tell who invested in their brand and has consistently invested in it and who hasn't. And those are some of the biggest players in the market now. Marketing science backs it up. We know that share of voice will equal share of market. Kantar produced a survey that said, in fact, on the stock exchange, those brands who've got the fame energy will outperform their competitors sometimes up to sevenfold. Right, the data's all there. Problem is that the data is all in the B2C world, and trying to convince a CFO with data not from your industry is a real challenge. That's why we're investing in our own research, right? There's nothing for the insurance sector at the moment, so that's the problem we've been wrestling for the last couple of years. How do we demonstrate, the importance and the impact of brand in terms of a business's growth, right? Because we know that insurance businesses don't grow just by making sales, right? Each business will grow through acquire acquisition, really. It's talent, individuals, teams, other businesses. Yes, there's always innovation and new products and new lines of business, and we have clients that work in new and emerging industries like crypto and the hot and cold storage side of things, and then even space, right? But there's not new industries popping up all the time, so the market really depends on how strong is your brand, how strong is the perception of your brand, how well are you communicating to the market externally, internally, and do people believe you and trust you and want to do business with you? So that's something I'm really excited about. We've been working on that for a couple of years. Shameless plug, we are going to be launching that at the IMCA Ignite conference in Savannah, 8th to 10th of
June.
June. Beautiful
That's great.
venue and
Oh, it's
power.
beautiful.
We're yeah I'm so excited for that. It'll be a really exciting conference. But yeah, that's I think that's one of the things people are calling out for, crying out for, is really how do we demonstrate the effectiveness of brand building and get and build the business case to get investment in. I think from a tactical marketing, digital marketing has been a revolution, right? We've been able to get so much data, and people love it. We love it. You've got so much to point to. You can see reach. You can see engagement. Does it work? You can optimize. You can change. It's really fantastic. But it needs to be. We believe in two-speed marketing, right? So you need to combine that short-term tactical activity with the longer-term brand building investment, and then you get double bubble. It's that continual uplift.
And that long-term investment has to happen in the down markets and up markets, soft cycles and hard cycles. A lot of companies will pull back when things get a little rough, or when their pipeline is so rich, they're like, yeah, we don't really need to do this. We got plenty of business coming in. But if you have plenty of business coming in, that may not be forever, right? So you want to keep your visit, and I'm sure you counsel clients to do that over there. How do you help your clients sell internally that concept of consistency? Because you see campaigns, and I know why campaigns are around events, because events are exciting and they're sort of like a moment in time, but. How do you help your clients sell over the long term? I guess that's what the research will help here as well, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and you can point to data from other industries. You can see that over time, businesses that pull back when the economy's a little bit rough, they don't just stand still, they go backwards, because if their competitors just maintain their spend and you're going backwards, then by the time you're ready to spend again, you're playing catch up. You're not standing still, you're going backwards. And people who double down and invest more, they're growing, and they'll be the name, you know, and the brand that people remember when things are good. So I think that's one of the things we point to. The other is, you know, it comes back to the talent issue, right? Is it's the insurance industry is driven by relationships, mm-hmm. reputation. And that's why we've done, you know, these talent reports over the last few years, is really looking into understanding, you know, what is it that if people are our most important component of our market, we can't all have the best people all the time, right?
Right.
So
yeah.
We're always competing.
Yeah.
So how do we go ahead and, you know, make sure we are the business they want to work with? How do they know candidates got, you know, it's been for a long time a candidate's market, right? If you take pay and rations off the table, assuming everyone's getting, you know, what they're looking for, what else? What can you do beyond? How do you tell that story of the business that you are, what you deliver for your clients, the value you add, you know, particularly for the next generations that are coming through, is getting that story about how insurance really powers and protects people and the planet, right? Mm-hmm. There's so many innovations that are happening, you know, around what's to protect people and, you know, prepare people, make people more resilient for climate events. You know, and sadly, you know, what goes in the press is all the negative stuff, right?
I know, yeah.
Which is, yeah. You know, the smallest little percentage, you know, of these few claims that didn't get paid or whatever. But I think the big story that we need to tell more of is, you know, the positive outcome and impact that insurance has.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, when there was that huge earthquake in Morocco, they were protected because they had parametric insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that is, you know, and thinking about what's happening in Florida, you know, when there used to be quite difficult to get coverage, the insurance market is working with regulators to kind mm-hmm. of make sure that they can find a solution so that you can have cover. It does
yeah.
become insurable risks again.
Yeah.
And I think that's really the message that we need to get out for people who, yeah, people who work in the industry already, you think they would know it, but they don't shout about it necessarily. But certainly people we're trying to attract into the industry is, yeah, the power of insurance to fuel everything that happens and protect people.
It's, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's that kind of idea, what would you do if you couldn't fail? What chances would you take? And that's really where insurance comes in, right? It's that
mm-hmm.
safety net.
Yeah.
It means just go and do it.
Yeah, it's so, man, you're bringing up one of my favorite topics. But about 20 years ago, I was over in Japan. I was speaking at a seminar for the insurance industry in Tokyo. And I learned during that time there that young people want to work at banks and insurance companies. That they're considered like the holy grail of employment. They
wow.
they have such respect for insurance companies. And there's
yeah.
some big ones over in Japan. So
mm-hmm.
I was so struck by that. What is that? It's like, well, it's stable. I learned that they see it stable, which of course it is. It's you know, financially resilient. It's an industry with purpose. The,
mm-hmm.
most claims are very routine. People are very happy in all the research I've seen. And it has the careers can be really, really exciting. Like people who you know, we've talked in the past about, you know, insuring people going to space and people insuring
yeah.
horses, people insuring collector cars.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, a guy in a bad suit and tie trying to sell you life insurance. I mean, that is an image that seems to have stuck even with Gen Z, the younger
yeah.
folks coming in. They don't look at it. So there's a whole cadre of organizations here in the States, maybe over there as well. I know you guys are working on it and trying to get publicity for it, who are trying to get even to the high school level and say, hey, this is a wonderful career opportunity for you. and there's internships available.
Yeah.
You know, even kids that can't afford or the circumstances aren't there for them to go to a four-year school, they can go to community college and come out with a degree that get paid for by the insurance organization. There's mm-hmm. so much opportunity in the industry. And I feel like, you know, with your start in HR, if you can go back in time, it would be, you know, it'd be so yeah. cool. How would you describe it today? Because it's even more, the need for talent is so pronounced. It's mm-hmm. there's an urgency, at least here in the States.
Well, definitely. But I mean, in the States, you're leading, you know, you've got some of the leading risk management schools in the world, right? And
yeah.
you've got, you know, insurers and even some of our clients work with, you know, institutions like Georgia Tech and St. John's. And so I think you're kind of a bit further ahead than we are here in the
okay.
UK, because risk management is still quite one of those things. Someone said to me, you kind of, it's for neighbors and nephews, right? You only get into it if you know somebody
yeah.
who's in it.
And it's always an accident.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's always some accident. Like, I was an accident. I went to work at AM Best Company, just total accident. Gave up my job as a writer at a local daily newspaper and answered an ad, a good old fashioned classified ad, mm-hmm. and drove out to Olwick, New Jersey, which is like, think of the most rural place in England that's you can drive to. And that's what that was
yeah.
then. And I'm like, I have no idea what this is, but that was the start. And
yeah.
I've loved it ever since.
Well, yeah. it's the same for me. I mean, I turned up in London on my 21st birthday. The next week I had went to a recruitment agency and she said, oh, I've got this job and it's an underwriting agency.
Yeah.
I said, what's an underwriter? She said, I don't know, but it's a good job. And so we looked it up in the dictionary together.
The underwriter, yeah.
yeah.
I know.
And it was crazy.
People who wrote their names under a line.
Yeah.
And signed exactly. off on ensuring the ship going to the new world. Yeah, I mean, these
exactly.
are brave people. Put their money in
yeah.
the line. It's an underwriter. So then what happened? You got there and said, hey, this is not so bad, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the city. I'm standing next to the Lloyds building. It's a beautiful office.
Uh-huh.
Everyone's happy and smiling.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's one of the things, right, about this industry and why it's so surprising it's taken such a long time for marketing and branding to get a foothold, because it is one of the most sociable, you know, creative spaces
it is.
That I've ever worked in, right? I took a little step outside. I did some kind of contracting for a bit. I thought, I need to try something else. I'm getting stuck here. I worked in investment banking. I worked in legal, and I came straight back to insurance because it's the most, they are some of the nicest people, but it's also, you know, it's very sociable, right? It's very, very sociable. And, you know, that we know that, you know, young people are looking for that. It's, you know, people
so
still
true.
Crave it.
They crave
right?
it.
That human connection.
Yeah.
What
a place to do it, huh?
Yeah.
And I feel bad for the young folks and the students and young professionals how to deal with Zoom calls exclusively for going through school and work, because it's,
yeah.
I think it's really bad for the human. Human beings are social mammals. We
mm-hmm.
have to socialize in person, and over the screen isn't going to work. Maybe in the future, this idea of virtual reality, I read that it'll be like you're in the room with them. So
yeah.
even though you're not, so you won't have to travel, but it'll feel like you're in the room, because you know how different that is when you're face to face versus
yeah.
over Zoom. So that'll be kind of interesting to experience. But I digress. You know, I want to, I know you're a real champion for insurance marketing as a field, to the point where you would subject yourself to running for chair of the IMCA, because it's unpaid, more unpaid work. But no, I'm a big fan of the organization.
Yeah.
I know it's been around a long, long time. I've been involved since the 80s as an observer, and have been on the board as well. And I feel like you know, anybody listening to this who's in any kind of consumer or business marketing in the insurance and risk industries should be involved, because the feeling is, I call it tribal. It's a it's a safe place. People share a lot of great ideas, save you a lot of time if you're looking for help on things, a new consultancy or a business partner to work with, for example, or they have a problem. Everybody has pain, right? Everybody has pain. Look at what AI is doing to our industry. Yeah. Come together to this meeting and face to face. There's nothing like it. So thanks for taking on that role there.
Oh, it's a pleasure and it's a privilege, right? It's a volunteer organization. That's what absolutely blows me away every time, that it's such a welcoming and generous community, right, of people who are, you know, all sharing the same experience, right? Sometimes insurance marketing can be a lonely place. You could be, particularly if you're working in an independent agent and you are a team of one, right? You know, it's so valuable and so essential, right, to your personal development, just to getting new ideas, that personal connection, as you say, talking about pain points. How do we solve these problems? And the generosity of people in terms of the time they give, but also the advice and support they give each other, particularly not just at Ignite, but it's more visible because you're in person, but through the forum and, you know, through the committees and some of the meetups. I think the IMCA is such an incredible organization, and it's valuable for everybody from entry level to CMOs.
Right.
And, you know, I love that kind of complete circular learning. It's, you know, everybody's looking to learn something from each other and share something. It's so valuable.
And it's for anybody, all, you know, stages of your career too. I mean, there's a real chance to mentor younger folks. But I think I really value too, almost like a concept called reverse mentoring. Like, I need to hear from younger people on what's going on with AI, for example, right? So it cuts both ways. You know, I know you've been to a lot of conferences. I've been to a lot, you know, insurance conferences, like things like Risk World, WSIA, Target Markets. Big Eye agent events. Over in London, you have some big events, big ones, brokers and carriers and insurtech kind of stuff. And that buzz in the room, that excitement, people meeting each other, like you said, it's a happy place. The same thing happens in IMCA.
Yeah.
I feel like for every marketer who's there, you know, 250 or 300 people, there could be another 10, because that's the same feeling you see. So if you're a marketer and you go to one of these meetings like Risk World, 11,000 people, you walk around the trade show, everybody's hugging. It's like, you know, they're schmoozing, they're having some drinks, they're laughing. This is that buzz that you don't have to just sit in your booth and observe the insurance professionals doing. You yourself are an insurance professional, just on the marketing side. So think of IMCA that way. It's your own show for you.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, and the other thing is, right, the awards program is phenomenal. I'm biased, but I do think, you know, marketers in insurance are under-recognized and underappreciated. Not everybody, but it's so wonderful to be able to have this awards program where you can put in your best work and be judged by your peers, and you know, that you get feedback, you get to learn, and you know, if you win, you get awards to take home and show to your colleagues, look, I'm doing a great job, right? I've gone up against the best of the best in our industry, and I've won this award. This is what we're doing.
And the awards are cover so much ground, like event marketing, direct email marketing.
PR, annual PR, reports, campaigns, rebrands, and it's been leveled. So it's not, if it's always the big guys that win, because they've got bigger teams and bigger budgets. It's been designed so that everybody gets an opportunity to show, what they've done with what they've got available, and it's a very, very level playing field. So, you know, I love judging it as well. It's so so many things that
I know.
You see, right?
It's
and
so cool.
Like, that's so cool.
Yeah. It's fun to look at the strategy, particularly behind it, and and then the outcomes. I love it when you have that connection of words and art. You know, when you've got the messaging right, and then it comes to fruition with a great design team. You know, you do that every day there, so you know what I'm talking about. But it's you can't fake that. You know, you gotta put the work in on the words and the essence of what you're doing, and then otherwise designers, they love designing beautiful things.
Yeah,
they'll do anything. And then you look at it and say, well, that looks nothing like what I was talking about. But
yeah,
if you don't give them the roadmap, right?
And what does it mean? This is what Guy always says to me. He's like, but what does it mean? It looks good, but what does it mean, Lorraine? I'm like, okay, we'll give you some meaning, Guy.
Okay. What does it mean?
Yeah, that's the whole point. Everything that we do has to mean something. Otherwise, it's just, we used to say here, it's just tomorrow's chip paper, right? You want something that stands the test of time, that people can look at and they can go, right, okay, I get it. I know why you've done it. Whether they like it or not, right? It doesn't, if they understand what you're trying to communicate and why you've done it, it's so much more powerful, so much more memorable than just something that looks nice. You know, it's got to have that depth.
All right, so we're going to go back in time a bit and ask you about your younger self, and maybe even your younger self before you joined, got involved in insurance and HR and stuff. Any advice you would tell? That's classified.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Any advice you would give your younger self, Lorraine, now that you are where you are today, looking back?
I think, you know, and as you know, my kids are 16 and 18, so I'm constantly giving unwanted advice. But my favorite piece of unwanted advice is to be brave, right? To do the hard things, and doing it even if you doubt yourself, right? This is something that I'm starting to figure out as I get older, is that everybody doubts themselves, right? It doesn't matter how senior or how impressive they are. Everybody feels a little moment of doubt and just has that little worry of failure. But the difference is doing it anyway, and doing it in an intentional way and for the right reasons. So I think that's, you know, being brave is something I wish people had said to me earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. I can think of that that lesson spilling over as well to people in the C-suite, people in leadership positions who always want to be right, always want to have the answer, always want to display their confidence. And I think everybody's afraid if they would just, you know, be a little brave, but also have the guts to ask, you know, maybe I don't have the answer. Maybe I need to ask. Maybe I need to ask more questions. Maybe I need to be a little bit more curious about this. Combined with bravery to do that, I mean, that's how people grow. Mm-hmm. Some of the most impressive leaders I've met have those qualities. You know, they're not doing most of the talking. They're doing a lot of listening. Yeah, that's cool. All right, so a couple rapid fire questions. You good with this?
Okay. I don't know yet.
What's a brand you admire and why? It can be an insurance or outside.
Okay, so outside of insurance, Chanel is one of the brands that I absolutely love. And that's not why our logo is black and white. That was Guy's decision to showcase our clients' work, not us. Yeah. But I do love a black and white brand. Mm-hmm. But also the story, right, and how Gabrielle Chanel started. I mean, you think she started that business before women were even allowed to vote. Mm. Right? And she just found this niche in the market, and she was listening to what the market wanted. There was a gap. You know, women's clothes at the time were not built for women by women. So and I think that that idea of listening to your audience, thinking about what's right for them, not what's right, what the market says you have to do, and doing something a little bit different, feeling, you know, being brave and going, right, let's just try this. And then having the determination to stick it out and build it and go up against some of the biggest couture houses of the time. Mm-hmm. So I think the way that brand has, you know, evolved, you know, I went to an exhibition at the V&A a little while ago, and just the jewelry, the perfume, the clothes just have stood the test of time, right? It's just always, they're still classic. And I think that's what the best brands do, right? They create a feeling, a sentiment, and there's a truth behind them that is, you know, everlasting and, you know, and classic. Mm-hmm. And meaningful, and it moves people. And that's, you know, God, if we could create brands like that in insurance, that would be, that's my dream, right?
Yeah.
We've tried, we've had a good go.
Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe in my lifetime anyway, it'll get sorted out. I think there's a real chance that the next generation will. It's kind of a dream of my own that we'll stop apologizing for being in the insurance industry, not the marketing side necessarily, but just in the insurance industry, our clients, and say, hey, we're proud of what we're doing. And then the consumers over time will look at it differently. That's my hope anyway. But okay, so another question for you. What's a popular branding trend or concept idea that you completely disagree with?
Well, this is going to be really controversial, and I know, because I often have this conversation with my daughter about what's going on in TikTok. And there's this whole sense of you know, unpolished marketing, right? And to me, that's great, right? For individuals, for influencers, you be you, and that there's definitely a place for that. And I just don't always feel that it's at a brand level. Brands are made up of people, you know, and sometimes it's appropriate, right? Sometimes it's a behind the scenes thing, or but there's craftsmanship in great marketing, right? It is polished. It is thoughtful. It is intentional. That doesn't mean it's not authentic, because it, you know, you've thought about it and you've made it look good and sound good and resonate with your target audience. I think, you know, craft is something that we naturally will be close to my heart, and I'm sure yours, given the businesses that we do. But I just, unpolished marketing is one of my little bugbears, and I think it should be used sparingly.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the word authenticity. I read a piece in the Wall Street Journal recently about, might have been this week, about how there's this backlash against AI usage in advertising. Mm-hmm. And people are getting very jaded about models, for example, looking just too perfect, actors, you know, behaving in a certain way that's kind of off what their brand is, but AI kind of polished, put that little final polish on it. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Because I know there's going to be a number of pivots with AI and marketing for sure over the years ahead. But I find that kind of interesting. People craving the human, you know, it's interesting.
The flaws.
The flaws,
right,
of human.
They don't want the perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, which is kind of like a twist on what you said, unpolished. Mm-hmm. AI can make things too polished too, right?
Absolutely. And it, you know, there's a place for it, and we use it. And I think, you know, that's part of innovation and technology. You know, we wouldn't have the sort of designs we have now if we'd all stuck to desktop publishing.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah,
you
no.
know, you need to, or Quark, and then it moves on and it moves on. But it's that human element that is the difference. I think AI could probably, and probably is, being programmed to learn to fake authenticity.
I know.
Because it's such a buzzword right now. Yeah. Everything needs to be authentic. But I I genuinely believe with, you know, people in the mix, AI can be a very, very powerful tool, right? Mm-hmm. So it can, you know, help you do more with less. It can help you do things quicker. You can, you know, I know some of my team have conversations with AI, using it as a sounding board to try and figure out a problem. And yeah, of course, we can create loads of different things, you know, beautiful images and, you know, videos and things like that. So there's so many possibilities. But the thing that the secret sauce is that human element, you know, that, and that's never going to, I never say never, right? But in my lifetime, hopefully that won't ever disappear, that human craft and the human compassion and energy and emotion won't be lost from our creative industries.
That it may be the last 1% of the whole thing, but let's keep that 1%. Maybe it's 20 or 10% now. let's keep at least 1%. All right, last question, Lorraine, before I let you go. What's a marketing trend that people should pay attention to? And it could be, again, insurance marketers.
Well, I mean, I think it's everybody, right? It's this GEO, generative engine optimization. And I'm sadly old enough to remember when the internet started, and there was a platform called Ask Jeeves, right? It was one of the
I remember Ask Jeeves. That was great.
Yeah,
I used it all the time. It was like before Google. Ask Jeeves. That was in the 90s, right?
It was, and it never did the thing that you wanted it to do. You wanted just to ask it a question, right, and it to give you the answer and all the options. And I think where we are now is we're actually asking Jeeves, right? We can finally just type in a question and get all these options. I mean, obviously, we've got to watch out for hallucinations, and there are perils with it. But learning how to optimize your digital marketing spaces for, you know, AI questions is absolutely essential, particularly as more and more people become reliant on that approach to finding out anything. It's so easy. People just will do that. So yeah, that's the trend I'm learning about at the moment.
Ask Jeeves. Jeeves was his butler, wasn't he? Like a he like a dressed like a butler.
He was.
Oh my gosh.
I've dated myself now.
I'm well aware. I was well along in my career. You were just a kid in high school, probably. Well, anyway, Lorraine, it was great to chat with you, and I look forward to seeing you in Savannah, June 8th, 10th, I think, IMCA conference. And hopefully a lot of our listeners will be there as well. But again, thanks for taking time. Wish you all the best.
It's a pleasure. Yeah, lovely to see you, Peter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Aartrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.